JC Corcoran Podcast.
Okay, we go back live to the Esquire Theater with the Breakfast Club. JC, do you have a moment to talk with a good friend of yours?
Yeah, I understand we have Super Dave Osborne on the phone. Soup, how are you?
Okay, Soup, how are you? We got to relay this thing. Let's try something else. Hold on.
What are we doing now?
Hello, Soup, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Soup, can you hear us?
Okay, JC, it looks like we won't be able to do this.
I'll tell you what, then. You're going to have to apologize, and maybe we'll try it some other time, because that won't work. That's the voice, ladies and gentlemen, of Super Dave. Just tell him to say something to the crowd here at the Esquire Theater, because the system won't work.
Okay, Super, are you there?
Yeah, I can barely hear you.
Okay, just say hello to the folks down at the Esquire.
What?
Say hello to the folks at the Esquire.
I'm on the air?
You're on the air. Don't cuss.
JC?
Yeah!
Can you hear me?
Yes!
Oh, I guess you can't hear me, JC, because you're at the Esquire Theater. So I guess we'll just record something here. The only way we can do this is you ask me some questions. I'll leave a pause and... I'll answer the question. I'll just have to guess what you asked me. So what's your first question?
Gosh, how are things in California?
Yes, that's
today?
Right. Our show does debut tonight at 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock your time.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be sensational. Thank you for asking.
I got a question. You ever seen a grown man naked?
Melissa Manchester is our special guest. I don't want this to turn into a complete plug call. It's going to sound like the only reason I called is to push the fact that our show debuts tonight. So you'll have to ask me something else.
Okay, well, have you ever been to a Turkish steam bath?
Well, as a matter of fact, I do think it's one of our best shows. I'm really proud of it, and we do a tremendous stunt to close the show. Ask me something else. I don't want to talk about the show.
You ever had a dog get on your leg and...
Yes, it's going to be our best season. Ask me something about yourself, will you please?
Gosh, did you think that that rash would ever go away?
Well, you'll have to answer that. Did you have a great time when you visited our show or not?
All right,
we had a lot of fun having you there.
Get rid of him. All right, Super Dave Osborne right there on the Showtime Cable Network.
Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say... I've heard it all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
Tuesday, April 12th, 2022, 219 days remaining in our American democratic system of government, as we have known it. How you doing, kids? It's JC here at jconline.com. We're going to be doing something a little different here today, and I'll explain that in just a minute. There was another country music award show on last night. I swear to God, there's one on once a month now. And I don't understand when the networks just don't say, okay, we know that there's a lot of country music fans out there, so on Tuesday night, we're going to do 2 or 3 hours of country music performances. But they cook up these phony award shows, and then they wheeled out the Judds last night. The Judds haven't performed in like 20 years, and the older Judd, the older woman there, she had some sort of facelift, and she didn't even look like the same human being. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Back in the, I guess it was the 90s when they were experiencing all of their popularity, didn't they sort of make the idea, they were sort of trying to make the case for the fact that the mother in the Judds had some sort of liver disease or something that was probably going to die, and they did a farewell performance? Everybody was like, oh, it's so sad. One of the Judds is, she's really, really sick. She's not going to make it. Let's all go. And it's 20 years later, and she's still doing fine. With a facelift on top of it. Speaking of the 90s, Britney Spears is pregnant again. Tish Cyrus has filed for divorce from Billy Ray when she woke up one morning and looked over and was like, oh my God, I'm married to Billy Ray Cyrus. Get me out of here. If you're a fan of Curb Your Enthusiasm, good news, Larry David coming back to do season 12. Spike Lee selling almost 4,000 NFTs with original frames from She's Gotta Have It. This is what, there's two things going on right now, is the NFTs and Bitcoin. For the most part, people don't understand either one. 60 Minutes' Sherry Alfonsi tried to do it. She actually did a pretty good job the other night on 60 Minutes trying to explain the whole digital currency thing. I understand it a lot more now than I did before the report, which means that now I'm even less likely to ever get involved in it. They're like, one day the whole thing could just go poof. And you got nothing. And everybody, to a man that was interviewed for the piece said, don't invest any money in digital currency that you can't end up eventually going without. In other words, there's a pretty good chance. Say you got $10,000 that's just sort of laying around. You don't know what to do with it. Fine, put it in digital currency, Bitcoin, something like that. You may never see that $10,000 again. And now these NFTs, that's another weird one. Some people are saying you just spent $40,000 on a JPEG. And I know some people feel different about it. I don't know what to think. I'm like Dennis Miller. I have all my money tied up in Wheel of Fortune gift certificates. All right, people are still voting on the relative importance of the Will Smith situation. 48% of Americans approve of Will Smith being banned from the Oscars for 10 years. 26% don't. That leaves a whopping 26% of people going, I'm trying to finish this spaghetti recipe here. Can you call back some other time? Will Ferrell going to be in the Barbie movie with Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling. The Batman hitting HBO Max next Monday. Ringo is, I don't know if he's pushing 80, if he's already 80. I forget. I'd have to look it up. All I know is he's going out on tour. So is Alice Cooper later on this year. Birthdays today. We got Saoirse Ronan from The Lovely Bones and Hannah. She's 28. Brooklyn Decker, smoking hot blonde from Sports Illustrated, 35. Claire Danes, 43. Shannon Doherty, 51. Vince Gill, 65. Andy Garcia, who was actually born a twin, but his twin brother came out like, I don't know, a size of a tennis ball. So he didn't really have a twin. Ed O'Neill from Modern Family, Married with Children, 76. John Cave Steppenwolf, who blew me off once, 78. And David Letterman, 75. I remember this very, very vividly, 1961. Soviet cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin took a one-orbit, 108-minute ride in a 10,395-pound vehicle, become the first man in space. When he landed in his parachute, he was met by a terrified woman on a farm who threatened to attack him with a pitchfork. It's like that scene from Back to the Future where he crashes into the barn. Lisa Bonet divorced Lenny Kravitz on this date in 93, 29 years ago. And Belinda Carlisle of the Go-Go's married Morgan Mason. He was the producer of Sex, Lies, and Videotape. They've been married for 36 years today. If by chance you were a fan of the old Frank Opinion afternoon radio show, you know the name Bill Cleveland, who had his own segment, a little joke thing right before 5 o'clock every afternoon on KTRS. That show is no more. Just talked to Frank a couple of months ago. He's doing okay out in California. But Bill found himself sitting there going, what do I do now? And what did he do? He created a job for himself, and it's a fantastic idea. He just basically said, I'm going to travel pretty much for a living. I'm going to travel, and I'm going to write about it, and I'm going to do videos, and I'm going to do books, and he has a brand new book you're going to hear about. So we're going to dedicate the rest of the podcast today to our buddy Bill Cleveland, who, for my money, is living the life. How did you figure out you could do this for a living?
It was all by accident. I mean, you know, I started doing some videos just, you know, a couple hours away from St. Louis. I think the first one I did was in Louisville, Kentucky, on the Bell of Louisville. It was like this old paddle wheeler or something.
Yeah.
And but then what happened was I started finding other videos online and started just kind of researching where these people were coming from and what they did. And I started to learn that people do travel writing for a living. And I thought, well, that's insane. How could you possibly just get paid to travel? And how does all that work? So I ended up, one of the videos that I found online, it was this young lady Beth Santos, and I reached out to her. She did a video series that was exclusively on like women's travel. She kind of found her niche. So I reached out to her, and she was really nice. And I just asked, I said, how do people do this? How do people do it? And so she was very nice. She talked to me about it. And she told me, and this is what she told me. She says, yeah, you can do it. She goes, but you're not going to make any money for like 4 years. And I thought, 4 years? I don't have time. I don't have 4 years. And I'll be damned, JC, if that was almost not right on the money as far as timing go. It took me about 4 years of investing my time and energy into this before I started making money.
So why 4 years? And then why eventually did the money start coming in after 4 years?
Great question. So that's why you're a professional.
Yeah.
4 years, because you have to build an audience. So, you know, it's not like you just throw up videos and kabam, you know, you got millions of people following you or whatever. What happens is usually it's one video that you do, and it's usually one of your early ones. Somebody just kind of discovers it and then starts sharing it around and they catch fire. And then all of a sudden, all of your other videos start to become noticeable. And then it's just kind of, you know, headwind. And it makes you more and more popular. I make it work by doing other things. So how I make it work. So I do video segments. I produce video content for tourism offices around the country that they share on social media, that they can use on their websites, things like that. I do some speaking events where I talk about travel. I talk about, you know, new books that I have coming out or whatever. Books, there's another thing. So I write books. Sell those, do some speaking events tied into those, and then freelance writing. So I might get a gig from the Los Angeles Times or a blog. You know, there's a bunch of travel blogs that pay a little bit. I have to juggle a ton of stuff to make it work, but it does work. And so far, so good. Almost exactly 10 years in.
You mentioned the LA Times specifically. That's what I heard that you had done. What was the piece that you did for them?
So the first one that I did for them was about traveling with your parents. And so my dad, this was kind of funny. So early on, well, he still kind of does this. People, his friends, you know, church friends, baseball friends, whatever, they would, you know, talk about me. And he would tell them, he'd go, oh, yeah, he's on vacation again. And he would say that over and over. Yeah, he's on vacation again, you know. And it's like, and I finally got tired of it. I said, all right, here's the deal. I said, you're going to take one of these trips with me. All right, you're going to go on a road trip with me. And I want you to see what it is that I do. And so I'll never forget this. We went to Indianapolis. And JC, we weren't 3 hours into the trip in Indianapolis. And he goes, oh, my God. He goes, how do you do this? And I said, how do I do what? Vacation? And then he got it. Then the lights went on because I'm hauling camera equipment. I'm running from place to place to do the stories and doing, you know, and all this and that. And then he kind of saw, okay, yeah, you're traveling, you're having fun, but you really are putting in a lot of work. So,
yeah, this is exactly. This is what people say about radio people too, is they think that we play golf for about 6 hours every day and then have some lunch. Have a couple of cold ones and then saunter into a radio station, sit down and just start talking for about 3 hours and that's it. And then you go home and you do it all over again. They have no idea how much work goes into this.
No, you're right. Well, if you're doing it correctly, you're right. It does require a lot of work. But back to my dad. So I what I did discover on that trip was he was a really good road trip companion. We had a lot of fun.
All right, the new book is called The Ultimate American Music Bucket List, A Travel Guide for Music Lovers and Road Trippers by Bill Clevelin. And at the end of the segment here, we'll give him all the details, all the information as to where to get the book and how to check out your website and all your social media stuff and everything like that. It used to be in the old days, and I'm sure that a lot of museums and things like that that people gravitate to are still this way where, I mean, I remember when I was 10 years old, my parents took me to Jacksonville, Illinois, and the whole Land of Lincoln thing. And you got to walk around in Abraham Lincoln's bedroom and, you know, there are all these different things down there in Springfield. And that was pretty much it. Now the whole thing is interactive. Everything, it turns out, is turned into interactive. What have you found with regard to that trend in traveling?
Wow, you nailed it. So, like I said, I started this in 2013, and when I started, museums were really just starting to make that adjustment to, from panels on the wall to interactive things that people can touch and view and listen to and all that. And so I've actually seen that trend kind of happen before my very eyes, not music related, but museum related. The Harry Truman Presidential Library in Independence, I was just up there and got to see their brand new setup, and it is unbelievable. When I first went there, everything was just, you read panels and you get to see, you know, interesting presidential artifacts and things. But now it's off the charts incredible. These interactive maps that are, these digital screens take up the entire wall. You can push things and things, you know, move around. They have this one interactive segment where, our interactive exhibit, where you sit down and you are and this was before my time, so I don't remember all the details, but, you know, where I guess back in his day, they were worried about spies, like, was it Russian spies, sure, or whatever, or communist spies or something. And so you sit down at this thing, it looks like you're on the set of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and, you know, and the lights are moving around in the room like you're on a game show, and everybody that participates, I think there's like 9 people at a time can participate, and you hear these things that, and you have to judge whether you think it's a communist spy or whether you think that it's a safe, you know, American ally or whatever. And it's like a game show, but it's in the museum. And so I think what these people have just figured out is now over time, probably a lot because of cell phones, that people just do not have an attention span anymore to walk around and read a pamphlet on the wall, or, you know, they have to be entertained, and it has to be quick and to the point, to where they're not bored.
Yeah, even at the JFK Museum in Dallas, there's a whole interactive aspect to that museum too. So there's, yeah, a lot of that stuff all over. That is the new trend. All right, with regard to the book, The Ultimate American Music Bucket List by Bill Cleveland, let's talk a little bit about, let's give him some of the highlights. Some things that when people open up the book, they go, oh, that was really cool. And certain things that you really liked.
Well, so I'll tell you first one thing that I learned. Well, I learned a lot doing the book. You probably already knew this. I did not. So Woodstock, all right? So the Woodstock Music Festival. I'm actually interviewing somebody tomorrow about this. But I always assumed Woodstock was in Woodstock, New York.
No, it wasn't.
I had no idea.
Watkins Glen.
Woodstock, you know. And then I realized, yeah. And I've talked, I'm not the only dumb one, because I've talked to some other people, like, oh, I had no idea. Bethel, New York. And so that's kind of cool. Fame Recording Studios, that's one of my favorites in the book, down in Muscle Shoals. That's where they, you've heard the term the Swampers, right? So that's where they got started. Aretha Franklin recorded her first hit song. She had tried other places and, you know, never really had a hit. And she came to Muscle Shoals, went to Fame, and found that sound. And that's where her very first hit came from. You got places like Sun Studio. You know, talk about a goosebump moment when you're standing in Sun Studio and they play Elvis Presley's very first recording, and you're standing in the very spot where he stood, you know, singing into the mic. I mean, so there's so many just cool experiences that you can have. And I'm a real big fan of, you know, being able to put your own 2 feet in the places where history happened. I think that's a really cool thing for people to do, especially for a topic like American music. To get to trace those roots firsthand.
Are there places that you went to that you thought to yourself, well, I'll do this because I got to do it, and it turned out to be much better than you thought? And similarly, maybe some place that you'd heard a lot about, you went in there and you went, well, this is a big dud.
I'll say, I did RCA Studio B for the first time in the fall, last fall. And I'd already decided it was going to be in the book, but I hadn't, done it personally. And so for folks who don't know, so Elvis recorded a lot of his music here later on after he had left Sun Studio, Sun Records. I was not expecting much out of it, but much like Sun Studio, I had those goosebumps again, because what they did, what I thought this was really neat. So apparently, like Elvis, for example, and everybody has their little idiosyncrasies, their own little habits, things that they do when they're recording. Elvis, apparently, for a lot of his songs, they would like turn the lights completely off. Now, I don't know how that works for the musicians. I guess they already know the music. But so what they would do is they would play some of Elvis's songs, and then they would turn all the lights off, except for these little light fixtures that Elvis had paid for and installed. There was, I believe, it's like red, green, blue, and yellow or whatever. And there's four of them in different, each little corner of RCA Studio B. So all the lights were off except for these little colored lights that are up at the top. And then they would play, you know, several of the songs that he recorded in there. And again, goosebumps. You're like, holy crap, like I can actually feel like I'm here when he was recording. That was pretty cool. I would say that was one that would kind of surprise me. One that was a dud, I don't know. Maybe I'm just too positive of a person. I always try to take something good out of every place that I go to.
I saw you on the corner of, standing on the corner in Winslow, Arizona. Of course, a reference to the Jackson Browne song made famous by the Eagles, Take It Easy. Is there anything else there other than the opportunity to have your picture taken standing on the corner in Winslow, Arizona?
Well, so it's really cool because it's a Route 66 attraction. So it's one of these, if you've ever done Route 66, most of it is, you know, you're looking for little places to pull off the road because, you know, it's a long, long way out to California. And so that's a great place to stop, stretch your legs. There's a gift shop across the street, of course, a couple of little restaurants. But what they did was they made a standing on the corner park, they call it. And so there's this great big Route 66 painted in the middle of the intersection. You've got the statue of Glenn Frey. And then there's one, of course, as you mentioned, of Jackson Browne as well. But the honest to God truth is, yeah, that's pretty much all that's going on in Winslow, Arizona. But you know what? If you like doing Route 66, if you like that stuff, it's perfect. It's a fun roadside attraction, and it's it doesn't cost you anything. What the heck?
You also did grave sites for the new book. Anything stick out in particular?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of pretty interesting grave sites. Hank Williams Sr. Down in Montgomery, Alabama, his gravesite has AstroTurf on it because so many people come to see it.
Oh,
apparently, Hank Williams Jr. decided at some point, this is probably 30 years ago, to just AstroTurf it. Why pay somebody to keep coming out and fixing the grass and take care of it? Let's just put AstroTurf. So you go out and the whole thing is covered in AstroTurf. I mean, not his grave, his actual grave, you know, the tomb or whatever, or the tombstone. But yeah, so there's AstroTurf all the way around it. That's kind of bizarre. Michael Jackson's grave, so that's in the book. And who knows with the Jackson family, what's true and what isn't. But apparently, Michael Jackson's mother was completely paranoid that his body was going to be stolen from the cemetery. So again, I don't know if this is true or not, but the rumor is, or legend or whatever, is that during the funeral, there was never a body actually in the casket for Michael Jackson. There was nothing in there. And that Jackson's mom had him cremated and put his ashes over Neverland Ranch. That's kind of the rumor. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. His actual grave, or his casket rather, is kind of locked up, so you can see it through a window. But what a bizarre thing to think now that whole, because that was a big deal. I'm sure you remember the funeral, and everybody, they come carrying the casket down or whatever, and to think there might have been nothing in there the entire time.
There's also what I call little snacks in the book, and in the two books that I wrote, I tried to do this too, as opposed to just having straight writing in the whole thing. You have little bits and pieces, and one of the things I like is the explanations of the story behind certain songs. One of the things that stuck out is I've heard about a half a dozen different explanations, including the one that's in your book, with regard to the Phil Collins song In the Air Tonight. For a long time, there was an internet rumor going around that he had witnessed a murder, and that's why he wrote it the way he did. Your explanation, and I'm saying your because the one that I heard, I've been going with because I thought it was right, but the one that you have is that he was at a very, very dark place in his life, and that's sort of where the lyrics came from. Maybe the reason why those stories have been perpetuated is because I heard that the real story was that he had gotten a new drum machine, one of those, you know, electronic drum machine things that were coming out in the 80s, and they just started playing with it. And as they were playing with it, they just threw some lyrics in, and the next thing you know, you got in the air tonight, and there was no story behind it other than it was a test of the new technology. So who knows? And then you've got a story in there about Don't Stop Believin', which is almost identical to a story that Willie McGee, the great Cardinal ball player, told, where he thought that it wasn't going so well for him and he was going to come home. And he called up and his father answered the phone and said, "There's nothing for you here. Don't stop believing. Just continue to do what you're doing. You know, if you want to play ball, play ball." In the case of the guy from Journey, it was like, "There's nothing here for you. Stick with your dream."
Right.
And the next thing you know, you've got one of the biggest hits that Journey ever had in Don't Stop Believin'. Those are great little tchotchkes in the book.
Thanks. Yeah, and I think a lot of times, Hotel California is another great example of this, where the legends just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger as time goes on. And you have to wonder, these guys that write these songs, men and women that write their songs, you have to wonder if they really put that much thought into it at the time. And as time goes on, right, and these legends get bigger and bigger, you wonder if some of these people start believing some of the things that they're hearing, you know.
Did you ever see the Dana Carvey thing where he did, it was actually the audition he did to get on Saturday Night Live, but it was when he was writing Cold as Ice, and he was just sort of making it up as he went. It's cold as ice, paradise, and the feeling is nice. And just going on and on like that.
You're just, you're right. You're just scrambling for words that rhyme. And then before you know it, you got, you know, people telling you that you wrote about, you know, seeing somebody getting murdered or something. I mean, you know, I think we give them too much credit sometimes for some of these songs, but, you know, they're fun to talk about at least, right?
All right, so the book is called The Ultimate American Music Bucket List by Bill Cleveland. We're going to give you all the who, what, where, when, why in just a couple of seconds here. What's next for you?
Well, I'll tell you what I would like to do, and I'm hoping to do. Later this year, I would like to begin traveling full-time. And I may have told you about that in a conversation that we had. And, you know, this is one of those kind of rare opportunities where I'm in a position where I'm a single guy. I don't have any kids or real responsibility. and now with home prices being the way they are, I could cash in, and I'm one of the few that really can just say, I mean, I can travel across the country and be paid for it, or at least make a living doing it, and not have to have a home base. And I will tell you, as frightening as that is, it's also incredibly exciting. And it's been a while since I've been really excited about anything. And so the idea of just being able to bounce around from city to city, and just exploring more, because you have to understand, when I do my trip, I go into a town or I go into a city, and I'm there for usually 2 days, maybe three, because that's about all that the local, you know, tourism office is going to foot the bill for, right? They want you out of there, come and do your stories, and, you know, we'll see you later. But to be able to go to a place for, like, say, a month at a time, let's take Washington, D.C., for example, you know, if I go up there and I stay for a month, boy, I can do all kinds of stories. I don't have any limitations really on my time, more opportunities for me to do, you know, video segments and things like that, all the while doing exactly what I'm doing from my home in St. Louis, and I don't have to have a mortgage. I can Airbnb, or I can, you know, work on the dime of the city that's hosting me. So that's what I want to do. I'm hoping it all works out. You never know. Hopefully I don't, you know, I see mortgage rates ticking up a bit. Hopefully that doesn't make a difference here. But yeah, I want to travel full time and do this full time.
That's it. We broke a story here today. Bill Cleveland may become homeless. I don't know. It's almost like the scene, the whole storyline in Lost in America with Albert Brooks, where they just live in an RV and or even Samuel L. Jackson's character is just going to walk the earth, and hopefully it doesn't turn into like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, where the next time I see you, you're dragging a whole crate full of shower curtain rings because you don't have a home. All right. With all that in mind, let's talk about the, like I said, the details. How to get the book. Let's talk about websites, social media. People who want to follow you, go ahead. Dump it all on them.
Yeah, you bet. So there's the website is AmericanMusicBucketList.com, AmericanMusicBucketList.com, and that'll get you to where you can pick up a copy of the book. What's also cool, JC, is I did a 10-episode podcast. So some deeper dives into places like, you know, Tina Turner's schoolhouse down in Brownsville, Tennessee, where she first started to learn to sing. I mentioned I'm going to be doing an interview on, you know, Woodstock. So telling you what folks can see when they go to check out the Woodstock Museum and the original fairgrounds there. So there's a podcast you can download, but also you can get the book at AmericanMusicBucketList.com. And then for folks who just want to follow me, or as I say, stalk me across the country, my site is just BillOnTheRoad.com, and I have all my stories on there. People can search for things if they're going to a certain state and they're looking for some ideas for road trips. I will say, I know you have been a fixture in St. Louis for many years, and I have to assume many of your podcast listeners are St. Louisans. I have a thing on the website. It's just top 20 road trips from St. Louis, and you actually could just Google that. Road trips from St. Louis. It'll pop right up. It's always the first thing that pops up in the results to give folks some ideas for fun road trips from St. Louis, including you mentioned Springfield, Illinois. That's one of them on there. People have done the Lincoln site. So
there he is. He's on the loose, perhaps permanently, our buddy Bill Clavlin. And again, the ultimate American music bucket list. Bill, you're living the dream. Best of luck to you. Congratulations on your success. Let's make this a regular thing. I'd like to check in with you maybe every 6 months or so and just find out. This is fascinating stuff. And with people having been cooped up for the last 2.5 years, and you know, maybe the gas prices come down a little bit and then people hit the road again, this is just perfect stuff for people to go out and instead of just, you know, hitting Disney World or something like that or going to the beach, you know, here's some stuff that may just stick with you for the rest of your life. All right. The ultimate American music bucket list, Bill Clavlin. Thanks very much. Talk soon.
Okay, thanks, JC.
See, I hope you listened to that very carefully and you took some notes, because now that we can get out again after over 2 years of being cooped up, everybody's looking to do something. Get out, get some fresh air, see the country. And Bill just has dozens and dozens of great ideas, as you heard him say. So scribble down that website, pick up a copy of his new book, and we thank Bill Clavlin for joining us here today. And that's it for the J.C. Corcoran Podcast for Tuesday, April 12th, 2022, 219 days remaining in our American democratic system of government as we have known it. We are here every weekday morning, right about 7 o'clock. We publish absolutely free. We archive everything. Don't forget, you can email me, JC at JCOnTheLine.com. Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Talk to you again in the morning. Tomorrow could be a very, very interesting day, and I don't mean that in a good way. Somebody in the Midwest, somebody in the St. Louis region, and it could be us, is going to get clobbered tomorrow by a very intense weather system that they started talking about last Thursday. That's not a good sign. So strap in, get yourself a bucket of dip. We're going to be ready to go tomorrow morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.